Our next speaker is Neil Cruz. So Neil is a Vice President of Big Letter Software. He is a member of TC 4.7 and Vice Chair of SPC 205. Neil has a PhD in Architecture Engineering from the University of Colorado, where he worked on the research he's presenting today. So let's welcome Neil.
Thanks, Wangda. So today I'm going to be talking about how we can use high-performance computing to improve the way we calculate heat transfer from building foundations. Again, our learning objectives for today. So let's start by asking, why foundations? Why do we care about heat loss from foundations? So first, the most obvious thing is, with very few exceptions, every building has a foundation, and buildings lose heat through the ground, through their foundations to the ground. And foundations also appear in our energy codes, and they appear in these tables. They have these specified F factors for slab on grades and C factors for below grade of walls. And I so far have not been able to find a reference for where these numbers come from, and my suspicion is that they're used as a kind of a crude approximation of some of the multidimensional heat transfer effects. And if anyone in the audience can point back to a reference on this, I'd be really interested in that. And so I think what this points to is a lot of the challenges that people have had in characterizing below grade heat transfer. And so today I'm going to talk about I'll have two parts to my talk. The first part will kind of be talking about the challenges just related to the scale of computation required for foundations. And then the second part is going to be how I've used high performance computing to derive a solution. So part one is the scale of computation. So the above grade envelope is pretty well characterized in most of our building energy simulation tools. It's mostly one directional, and we can characterize it fairly well using one dimensional analysis. But below grade, you know, heat follows the path of least resistance, and so you're going to have these multi-directional, it's highly two-dimensional radial heat transfer paths along the foundation, which make it a lot more difficult to calculate. On top of that, there's also effects in the corners of foundations, and so you also have three-dimensional aspects that you need to consider as well. And so if we were to really break this down and we think about the ground and the materials of the foundation, to really calculate this correctly, you'd have to do an energy balance on every small volume of soil or part of your foundation. And we can then think of the total calculation that's required is going to be proportional, or the total time that's required is going to be proportional to the number of calculations we're performing. And so that's going to be, it's going to be scaled with the number of cells that we have in our x direction, which is on the order of 100 cells, and times the number of cells in the z direction, which is our depth into the ground, again, on the order of 100, times the number of cells in the y direction, and now we're already at a million computations for each energy balance. And if we're going to solve all these equations simultaneously, we're often going to employ an iterative solution technique. So each iteration is going to be another set of calculations. And so you can see the number of calculations is quickly growing. And because we're doing annual energy simulations, typically, we're going to need to do dynamic time stepping. And so for each time step, which for a year at an hour is at least 8,760, we're going to have to do calculations there as well. And on top of that, for the ground, when you start heating a building, it takes several years for the ground to actually kind of become accustomed to the heat and kind of approach a steady periodic state. And so you might want to simulate several years prior to the year you're actually exploring. And so this number can explode pretty quickly. And we got 10 to the 11th computations, and so that's 100 billion computations. And just to kind of give this a little bit of perspective for you, I took a problem. You can see this foundation here. It's a basement with some exterior vertical insulation along half of it. And this is in a three-dimensional simulation. And I sent this to a supercomputer. This simulation took 3 weeks to solve. And so just to give a little more perspective on that even, we can look at our whole building simulations kind of relative scale are, you know, between maybe half a minute to half an hour. Whereas if we're going to do three-dimensional foundation simulations, we're talking days to weeks now. And this is just prohibitively long if we're actually going to incorporate these calculations in our energy analyses. And so the trick then is to figure out a way that we can take our buildings, our foundation simulations, and make them a negligible portion of our overall whole building simulation, which, you know, currently just has very crude approximations for this heat transfer. And so the way most people do that is they'll start kind of on the extreme end, you know, on the order of weeks, and they'll take the same problem that we were looking at earlier, and they'll improve the speed simply by making the spatial discretization coarser. And so you can drop the order of magnitude of calculations by, you know, three orders of magnitude, but along with that, you're going to take a hit on your accuracy. Then furthermore, you can coarsen the temporal discretization by removing intermediate time steps and making your time steps longer, but again, you're going to take a hit on your accuracy. And so you can get to really fast computation, but the error is going to start building up on you. And so another point here, we're really in this point, in this position where we're trying to balance speed and accuracy, and it really is a trade-off. You can't improve both at the same time. And so another point to make here is that in order to actually characterize the error and the inaccuracy of these solutions, you need this simulation at a, you know, on the order of weeks to make that comparison, because they're all relative to that value. And so if you don't have those simulation results, you have no idea where your how accurate your simulations are. And so on top of that, we might want to explore how accurate are they across a range of, you know, climates, different footprint shapes, different designs. And, you know, so I looked at this problem, I explored different approaches, and I decided that I wanted to look at three climates, 12 footprints, and 25 designs, and that's a total of 900 simulations. And if each of these is on the order of a week, that's roughly 17 years. And I'll tell you right now, I didn't start doing these simulations when I was 13. So, and I have finished them. So, so we can look at the obvious solutions, and supercomputing lends itself to this. So this is Janus, is the supercomputer at University of Colorado. It's 184 teraflops, which, as Dave pointed out, is kind of peanuts by today's standards of, I think they're actually hundreds of petaflops now. And so Janus has 1,368 nodes, which each node is basically an individual computer itself, but they're all networked together using these very high-speed networking cables. And each of those nodes has 12 computation cores and 24 gigabytes of RAM. And the idea then is now for my laptop, using the network, I can send these simulations, each one of them, to a different node in the supercomputer and have basically 900 simulations done in the time that it would normally take to do one. And so this will give us all of our reference results. And this next step is to say, now that we have our starting point, how can we bring our error down and come up with better solutions? So that's the second part of this talk. So the way that we can do this is we can explore things outside of just making things coarser. And to do that, I developed a framework that I call Kiva. It's free and it's open source. And the idea of this framework is that you can take different approaches to the same problem and compare their relative impact on both speed and accuracy. And so that same problem that we looked at earlier that took 3 weeks to solve on the supercomputer, after using some of these approaches, we can run the same simulation, get very, very similar results, and this took 5 seconds on my personal laptop. And so the question is, how is that possible? And to get there, I went through three different approaches that, instead of making things coarser, really looking at the computation and the numerics involved in this problem to make things faster. So the first solution is better numerical methods. There are several finite difference methods out there, and they all can say this, solve the same problem, and they can be qualitatively kind of described in terms of their relative stability and their relative speed to solution. And they're, in general, they're characterized in kind of two ways. One, the first way is there are implicit methods and there are explicit methods. Implicit methods are inherently more stable, but they tend to be longer. They tend to take longer to run. And that's because the other way of slicing it is there are direct solvers and there are indirect solvers, which are the more iterative solvers. And so the implicit solvers tend to be iterative, but there's one combination here that is both implicit and direct, and so it's kind of a clear winner here. And if we apply that this case, which so this is called alternating direction implicit method, if we apply that, so it's the same solving the same equations, we can eliminate the iterations and reduce the order of magnitude reduce it by one order of magnitude, the total number of calculations we're performing. The second solution is faster initialization. So you remember I was talking about that, you know, once you start a simulation, you take several years for the ground to kind of get accustomed. And so ideally what you'd expect is, you know, after things kind of settle down, you'd expect the heat transfer to kind of follow a cyclical path that's driven by your weather, your outdoor dry bulb. And so you'd expect that, you know, from the beginning of 1 year to its end, you'd expect it to be symmetric and kind of continuous. So if you were to repeat the same year over and over again. But this is an initial value problem. So we have to start with a guess at to what are the temperatures in the ground at the very beginning. And so that guess, however good it is, will never be perfect. And so this is why we have to run this solution for years after years or year after year until you get to a point where you can say, you know, this initialized ground heat transfer finally got to a point where the beginning of the year and the end of the year are well enough aligned, and you can say, okay, well, this is t equals zero and this is the year of results that I want to use. And so basically what you've done is you've done four times of the computation for a quarter of useful results. And so the technique here is to get rid of this approach. And if you look at some of the approaches that are currently used, one of the more common ones is just to apply a constant temperature. And so if you look at this basement here, you can see the slab of the basement and the wall here. And we have some exterior vertical and horizontal insulation placed out here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a little video for you. And what you'd hope to see is that the temperatures in the ground at the end of the year align with the beginning, but you're going to see as it loops here that there's this big burst of heat going into the ground just to kind of react to that initial temperature. And so this is kind of the exact kind of situation that we want to avoid. An improved solution is to kind of do a little bit of pre-processing, actually doing some very long timescale calculations of the temperature before you hit that T equals zero, without a whole lot of extra short time scale simulation. And so this approach, which I developed, can be used, and you can see that the end of the year and the beginning of the year are more or less continuous. And I'll let it loop over one more time. So you can see right there, you know, there's hardly any noticeable difference. And so if we look at these, you can have, you know, the beginning of the year and the end of the year drastically different for the constant case, and more or less the same for the accelerated case. So this allows us to drop all of those extra years of pre-simulation, and we can reduce the number of calculations again by another order of magnitude. The third solution is what I call a two-dimensional transformation. And what I mean by that is we take the three-dimensional footprint of the building and we translate it into a two-dimensional context in terms of width and depth. And one other added benefit of this is that this two-dimensional context is symmetric, and so you only have to simulate half of the two-dimensional context. So you can gain further improvements there. And the way that this is done is actually based on an observation done by Bill Bonfleth, who is previous president of ASHRAE, in his dissertation work, and he noticed that the heat flux through foundations is related to the area to perimeter ratio. So regardless of the shape, as long as two shapes have the same area to perimeter ratio, they have the same heat flux. And so we can use that relationship to define the width of this two-dimensional context relative to the area to perimeter ratio and achieve more accurate results while still really reducing from our three dimensions to now just two dimensions. And that drops off two orders of magnitude. So we're now at 10 to the 7th, and that's a substantial decrease from 10 to the 11th. So the next step then was to actually test these methods. So I've made a lot of simplifications, but how they actually impact the accuracy of our calculations. So I performed more than 4,500 simulations. This is a total of 500,000 compute hours. So that would be 500... If we were to run each of these simulations on a single core machine, this is how long it would have taken, which is roughly 57 years. And I guarantee you I haven't done that yet either. So I'm not quite 57 years old yet. But using high performance computing really enabled me to save a lot of time in this process. And these are the results. So we look at the three-dimensional reference case solutions and the two-dimensional approximations, and you see that they have very good agreement. For those in the back of the room, there are some dots along here. And so the idea then is that we can now solve these accurately, and these all take roughly 5 seconds to run, and they're 99% accurate. And so the conclusion from this work is that we can really use high-performance computing to establish these very high-accuracy, even computationally intensive reference solutions. And this is kind of the methodology that's been applied by the method of tests, Standard 140, to do a lot of their comparisons to improve the calculations we're doing in our software. And so once you have these reference results, then you can use them to inform the faster, more approximate approaches and really drive at solutions that are achievable and reasonable for actual building energy analysis in practice. And so I think after all of this is done, I think we are able actually to find this balance between accuracy and speed. So I have a couple papers here that are referenced. And at that point, I'll take some questions.
I have a question. Wang Dazuo from University of Miami. So this is very interesting research. Just wondering, for speed up simulation, it seems like you have so many cells which are computed in parallel. That means graphics card can be used for this kind of. What are your comments on that?
Yeah, so I did not employ the GPU for this, and there are definitely frameworks, open source frameworks, open APIs to do this. And so you could possibly, you could definitely see some improvement there as well. And I know GPUs have been used to solve other multi-dimensional field type partial differential equations such as computational fluid dynamics. And there's no reason why that couldn't be applied to foundations or other building multi-dimensional heat transfer components. And so.
Hi, Neil. Ron Judkoff, National Renewable Energy Laboratory. So when we were creating the ground coupling cases for best test and then putting it into standard 140, one thing that I looked around for and couldn't find, and I couldn't myself derive a solution for it, was a rectangular three-dimensional harmonic solution for a semi-infinite solid. Mm-hmm. And if we had that, we'd kind of have a gold standard analytical solution to which we could, you know, put into best test and standard 140 for the ground coupling. So I'm just putting it out there. If there's any really sharp mathematician out there that has either found or derived such a solution, I would be very interested in seeing that solution and adding it into standard 140 for the ground coupling validation.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because there is the kind of steady state analytical solution that was found as part of that work.
Yeah.
And as of now, I'm not aware of anything that can handle the dynamic simulation.
Yeah, and even that steady state solution, even that solution, we had to, you know, kind of the edge condition is very unrealistic in
right.
order for it to be solved analytically. So,
right.
You know, there are some programs have difficulty emulating that case because it is unrealistic.
Right. And I guess one of the approaches then is, you know, that's maybe a point to compare to, and then we have these reference solutions that are very, very highly detailed that we can use to expand the testing, assuming that they, you know, carry their validity beyond that one case where they do match the analytical solution.
Well, and that's exactly what we did. We started
right.
with that analytical solution, and then we did have, you know, we had one of the participants use Fluent. You know,
we didn't hear that.
Oh, one of the participants used Fluent.
No.
Don't say that.
It was a commercial.
Oh.
Never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there were a number of participants using highly detailed
numerical software.
Numerical software.
Yes.
And we compared them to each other as we stepped off the analytical solution. So as long as we didn't have any excursions,
right.
we assumed that we could consider that set of solutions as our, quotes, truth solutions.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks.
Hey, Neil. Paulo Tavares, Colorado School of Mines. Two questions. I might have already asked this question before, but, you know, once you couple this with, you know, building energy simulation software, I mean, by how much, and you do one or two, you know, a year or 2 years of simulations, by how much do you increase the runtime? Is it only 3 seconds, or is it actually more like 20%?
Right. So the integration to whole building energy simulation, there's not going to be a lot of overhead. Basically, what these simulations would need from the simulation side is just the indoor temperatures and how those are changing over time. My suspicion is because the time constant for the ground is so large, you could actually use the previous time step temperature to drive the heat transfer for the current time step.
Okay.
And so there's not a whole lot of iteration that would be required to actually make the coupling happen.
Okay. I know you already graduated and finished your PhD, but is there any plans on expanding the work either to do underground, borehole technology or, you know, moisture-related issues or heat, you know, moisture transfer?
Good question. The framework has been set up to be extensible, and hopefully it would take relatively less effort than to many other authors have looked at this problem in the past. And with, my hope is that with an open source framework, other people could contribute and pick up where I left off if these are the research questions that they want to ask. And so with relatively little difficulty.
All right, thanks.
Hi, Neil. Dave Bosworth from Big Ladder.
Big Ladder.
I'm Build Lab. Build Lab.
We hiring?
Your truth model, your gold standard, is of course another model.
Yes.
And so the question always, the ever-ending question is, hasn't anyone put some thermometers in the ground, and do you have data from experimental data to compare that to? Is there any snippet of experimental data to make sure these things are actually behaving themselves?
Yeah, there are some very, very well instrumented test homes, mostly in California, and there's another set in Fort Wayne, Indiana, that have pretty good data that we can compare to. The problem with validating or verifying against experimental data is, as an example, there were four homes in Fort Wayne. They all had identical basements and would all be simulated exactly the same, because without more knowledge of what's actually happening. And so if you compare the data from each of those four basements, the actual heat transfer is quite varied between them, even though they're like all on the same block, supposedly the same soil. But what you can never account for in most of our energy simulations is that there is an aquifer or some kind of groundwater locality issue to one of them. You know, if someone has a sprinkler head break and the ground is just more moist there, you know, there's just so much uncertainty in this problem. And I'm not saying that we don't try to validate, but I think the number of inputs and the amount of uncertainty just in the thermal properties around the building make it almost prohibitively, you know, just from an experimental standpoint to actually measure everything we need to.
Right.
But not
in the ground, though. I mean, there hasn't been a line or array of thermometers. I mean, you're assuming, I mean, the internal temperature of the basement and the walls and things, but like the actual earth temperatures, do you know of anyone who's actually got any data on, like,
I do.
You know, I guess the geothermal guys.
Right, the geothermal guys. There's been studies where people have put, you know, an array of thermometers in a single location going down in depth. There have been studies where they, at the same depth, you know, an array just on a slab. But you really need all three dimensions to really verify. And so we can have points that we can compare to, but.
For the other speakers, you're also welcome to the front.
Ron Jedkoff, National Renewable Energy Laboratory. As Neil pointed out, some of the problems with trying to do empirical validation of ground foundation models. One thing that you have to realize is even to get those, thermocouple or temperature sensor arrays in there, you have to disturb the soil. So you've basically destroyed the condition that you wanted to measure in order to measure it.
Right.
As one of the keepers of standard 140 authors of best test, I'm often asked why we don't do more with empirical validation. You know, we tend to emphasize empirical and other methods, and we'd love to do more with empirical validation, but it's difficult. It's difficult in almost any whole building context, and it's even more difficult when you refer to foundations in the ground.
I agree.
Michael O'Keefe, Big Ladder Software. Actually, I had a question for Nathaniel. With the pixel counting technique, I'm just curious how do you determine when you're going to do your counting, how far away from the surface are you? Is there a, so you're looking from the standpoint of the sun toward the surface, how far away, how do you determine that?
So it uses an orthogonal camera, which is to say that it doesn't have a distance parameter. It's parallel rays that you can consider to have been shot from infinity.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Howard from Howard Chong from Cornell. I have a question for Neil. When you mentioned the field data of the ground, of the four houses mm-hmm. and the ground measurement as well as the maybe annual heat measurement, is there a bias that it runs one way or the other? Does it tend to be that the time constant's a lot faster or slower, or that there's a lot more, that the simulation is higher or lower in heating?
Right. So my experience is there's one big knob that you can turn to calibrate just about any foundation model, and that is the conductivity of the soil. And so it's I wouldn't say that there's a bias. It's how good is your guess? And if it's high or low, you can usually get a very good match just by turning that, changing that parameter. Unless you have, you know, one of these like localized, underground rivers basically going by your house. So, yeah.